to the Gym Podcast. Uncut, unfiltered, unreal.
Welcome everyone to the Gym Podcast, folks. I'm your host, Jimbo Fisher. Joining me this week, as always, is the one, the only, Brady Bush.
Hello, everybody. It's good to be back for yet another week. I had my wisdom teeth taken out this week, but I think my jaw and my voice has recovered well enough to be able to get on with it.
Yeah, you sound pretty good, Randy, I gotta say. I wouldn't have even guessed that you had this insanely invasive surgery just a few days ago.
It is what it is. It's okay.
Speaking of insanely invasive, okay, this isn't a good transition, but we can just talk about some insanely unfortunate games that I experienced last weekend. I think we gotta start just off the bat here, Randy. Alabama, defeating my Badgers. My question for you is this. Do you think that that game had more to do with Alabama being good or Wisconsin being bad?
I want to say a little of both. So the thing is, with the way our quarterback Ty Simpson played, just there is nobody in the country that's going to beat that type of performance. At one point, he was like 23 of 25 mm-hmm. for nearly 400 yards, 3-4 touchdowns, something crazy like that. And he has looked amazing. So you're just not going to beat that. Mm-hmm. But Wisconsin kind of looks a little hapless. Like, you didn't actually make a ton of mistakes. Mm-hmm. You didn't continually beat yourselves. There were a couple of interceptions, but it's when he's trying to make some plays. They weren't like totally laughable. They weren't as bad as DJ Lagway's interceptions.
I mean, what is, folks? But yeah, I don't know. It's just like you look at the stats and like we got outgained by like 250 yards. We got some first downs, decent third down conversion rate, but like it's just like you said, hapless. It's like it goes beyond just
the stats. You ran into a buzzsaw.
Yeah, it goes beyond the stats, folks. So maybe someday we'll be.
This is what happens when your coach abandons your program's identity and what made you respectable for the past few decades. He should not have done that. And now he's trying to like play catch up.
Yeah.
And he's basically having first year coach problems in year three because of him trying to get back to what he abandoned. And it's a mess.
Right, right. I think if this was a Wisconsin team of yore, you know, like a 2017 team or so, we'd still lose this game probably because, like you said, Ty Simpson just popped off. But, like, I'd like to think that a more, you know, run-heavy, ground-and-pound type Wisconsin team could at least, like, hold their own a little bit in terms of physicality. We saw no physicality from Wisconsin this week, and that's hard to see, you know? Other games, Randy. There's a number of games here. We need to give a shout-out to Sacco Steve. We forgot to mention him last week. West Virginia defeated Pitt. 31-24 in the backyard brawl. Do you think, Randy, is West Virginia back under Rich Rodriguez?
I'm not going to officially say that they're back. I mean, they did lose to at Ohio last week, regular Ohio.
Yeah.
But West Virginia's always been one of those programs that has managed to pop off some good seasons, know how to work with what the talent they have. They've had some pretty good years. I think in the Big 12, especially the new Big 12, they could be one of those teams that's poised to take advantage of what's essentially a wide open conference without an elite team.
True.
But they have, I mean, if anybody's going to do it, it would be Rich Rodriguez if he's not just treating this like a retirement job.
Mm-hmm.
So are they back? No, but I see a lot of potential in the program.
It's a good first step. I mean, certainly a team like West Virginia, much like Wisconsin, there's clearly going to be some rebuilding, I think, with, you know, a new coach and whatnot. So I wouldn't expect them to get crazy far this year, but I think it's emotional wins like this that are important for rebuilding a program.
Especially a rivalry win, and Pitt's been a pretty decent program these past few years, winning the ACC pretty recently.
A few other games here we want to talk about. Georgia Tech taking down, quote-unquote, number 12, Clemson, 24-21. We say this a lot, but is it safe to say that Clemson's championship window is over? We know the dynasty is over, but is like their championship window over at this point?
For any program with a ton of resources, it's not ever truly over and closed. If you mean for this season, probably they're just not good enough to win it.
Definitely that.
But
I mean
for the future,
yeah.
If Dabo is willing to adjust to the new era and do what he needs to do, I think they would be fine theoretically, but it's just a matter of can they and will they.
I think, and this is maybe a topic for another day, but I feel like in hindsight, a large part of Clemson's dominance in kind of like the mid-2010s may have been because it was kind of a weaker ACC. You know, like teams like Florida State, Miami, these traditional powerhouses in the ACC were down, and now it's the opposite. Now, you know, Florida State and Miami are actually pretty good at the moment. And so I think it's going to be harder for Clemson to kind of stand out in the pack.
Which is crazy to think, because in this new era, they probably have the most money of any ACC team, just support, resources, and everything. Sure. And that's why I think they would should be fine theoretically as a program, but it's just a matter of actually pulling it together.
Yeah, executing it. Another, probably the biggest game of the week, actually. Number 6 Georgia defeating number 15 Tennessee, 44-41 in OT. Randy, as an SEC fan, I got to ask you, how does Georgia always get away with this?
I don't know, man. I feel like this is how people must feel when they watch our games that have a similar outcome. Like, that's how it must feel. Because I remember Tennessee lining up for the game-winning kick in the fourth quarter, at the end of the fourth quarter, and thinking, there's no, like, Georgia's going to win. Like, I just know they are. I wonder how it must feel to be a Georgia fan watching this kick, knowing he's going to miss and knowing they're going to win in overtime. You just know.
It's frustrating, because I feel like Tennessee played their hearts out for most of that game, but it's just like, at a certain point, you knew they were going to choke it away. You know, and it was just like, it was tough to watch from a neutral perspective.
Right. I think if anything's to be cause for concern, if you're a Georgia fan, was the defense. I mean, you had 21 points lit up on you real quick. Yeah. And Gunnar Stockton is not a mobile quarterback.
No.
I mean, he can kind of sort of get out of the pocket as much as any other quarterback can these days, but you're going to need to get a little something from him early in games to really win a championship, which is what they're
after. They can't play behind like this consistently. You know what I mean? Like, Tennessee is a team that's going to choke away that opportunity, but a team like Bama won't, you know? That's kind of how I view it.
Right.
Keeping it somewhat in the SEC here, number 16 Texas A&M defeated number 8 Notre Dame, 41-40. I hate to say this because we have a lot of fans of Notre Dame who watch the show, but at this point, does it feel like last year's Notre Dame team was a fluke?
No, I'm going to disagree with that statement. They've played two amazing teams, two teams that probably are top 10, despite what they were ranked when they played. And they were two very close games that came down to key moments of the fourth quarter. It's not like they just straight up got embarrassed off the field, right?
Right.
And I mean, it's very unfortunate with a couple unlucky breaks. I mean, to start out 0-2 and to be ranked 0-2 is kind of funny. But it's very, they've dug themselves a hole, especially with no conference championship to play for, to try to back their way in.
I mean, like,
I wouldn't call it a fluke, though. Marcus Freeman kind of has this, he has this habit of dropping these games early and then winning like 10 in a row, 11 in a row.
That's true. Their schedule does get significantly easier from here on out. Their only other ranked game the rest of the season at the moment is number 25 USC at home. So, like, theoretically, you know, if they continue to play well, despite these losses, they could win out and they could still sneak into the playoffs. But like you said, no conference championship. It's not guaranteed like it would be if they had joined, you know, the ACC or something. But that's how it goes.
They're still a great team. They still have a lot to play for and they still could sneak in and make a run, which is exactly what they did last year. I mean, they've proven they can do it. So,
or Northern Illinois, rather. It was last year. One team I want to talk about, finally, this is a game that's probably on no one's radar, but it was very high on mine. Cincinnati defeated Northwestern State 70-0. And to the best of my knowledge, Cincinnati did not run out of fireworks during that game. For those of you who don't know, Northwestern State was the team that Minnesota had beaten the week prior, and they were up like 59-0 at half. And you should have seen, folks, you should have seen the Minnesota fans' reactions to this. I think it's safe to say Northwestern State is the worst team that you can possibly play at this point. I mean, to lose 70-0 against Cincinnati. I don't know, folks. I don't know.
It is kind of funny. Yes, I know you just wanted to get that shot at Minnesota.
Yeah, it feels pretty good.
There's a couple other games I just wanted to touch on. The Florida-LSU game. How do you only win by 10 when the other team throws 5 bad interceptions?
Dude,
I think that puts LSU in full fraud alert. I just got to be honest.
I think LSU is kind of fool's gold this year. You know what I'm saying, man? Like, I think they're certainly a talented team, but you think about Brian Kelly as a coach, right? You think about him and how he's never actually really gotten it done. And then you look at Clemson, which was their big marquee victory at the beginning of this year. That Clemson win has lost a lot of its luster. You know, I think LSU is still a good team. But looking ahead at their schedule in the SEC, it's going to be tough, man. Like, I don't think they can get the job done and make the playoffs this year.
They still have to play at Ole Miss, at Alabama, at Oklahoma, and versus Texas A&M. And they still have to play at Vanderbilt, which is crazy that we talk about Vanderbilt in 2025 as you have to play Vanderbilt, not you get to play Vanderbilt.
It's true. It's true. So, I mean, LSU, they're going to win a lot of games this year, make no mistake. And I think they'll be in the hunt, but I to have them at the third highest ranked team in the country, it's they're not that good, certainly.
Right. Also, I wanted to give a quick shout out to Vanderbilt for little old Vandy to go and play two Power 4 teams on the road this early in the season and win both by 20 plus points is like that's impressive for any program, but especially them. I'm honestly happy for them.
Yeah, it was cool to see. I mean, I feel bad for Hashbaum on free too, but for Vandy to go to South Carolina on the road and win 31-7, that's pretty wild. I think Diego Pavia has certainly been kind of the X factor for Vanderbilt these last two seasons, and I think there's enough stats and tape on him to prove that it's not just a, you know, it's more than a fluke. Like, he is the real deal. He's probably like the best Vanderbilt quarterback of our lifetime, which is kind of weird to say.
It is. Yeah, I mean, Jay Cutler was pretty good, but he didn't have been winning to this extent.
Oh, yeah.
I do find it interesting, like, with a team like Vandy, it's crazy how much just a player that really has an attitude and makes the team believe in themselves, what he could do for that team. Like, just to watch them actually play hard, and they know they can go in and win these games. Yeah. A lot of times, teams lose the game before they're even played. I mean, you talked about that, the whole Saban-Alabama factor. Teams would lose the game before they even enter the stadium.
I mean, that's Wisconsin's problem right now in a lot of ways. We could use some leadership like Diego Pavia, you know?
Exactly. And speaking of Diego Pavia, I kind of wanted to talk about this, was his attorney has challenged the NCAA for a seventh season of eligibility. Just why?
So, like,
I mean, I know why.
So what? I don't know why, because I only really read the headline. Is this just like a clerical error? Like, is this actually?
He played at a junior college for like 2 years, and he's trying to argue that those years shouldn't count towards NCAA eligibility, but because
what I'm trying to ask is he serious about this? Like, this wasn't just his lawyer being weird or filing something on the side. Like, he's actually serious about playing next season for Vanderbilt?
He's dead serious, because he's going to make NIL money. He's going to make over $1 million, probably. I mean, I would, too. I definitely don't blame him.
But
it's at a certain point, I mean, these are 25-year-olds playing against 18-year-olds. At a certain point, you got to get out of the way and let the 18-year-olds play.
I completely
agree. I mean, at a certain point, are you actually, like, good, or are you just overdeveloped physically? Because that's what I kind of wanted, because people's bodies are still growing,
right? And Diego Pavia is an excellent quarterback, but it is a fair point. Like, he's 24 years old right now, right? So he's had all these years to continue like developing as a player, which on one hand I think is good, but on the other hand, there's an 18-year-old kid out there that isn't going to get an opportunity to develop himself because he's behind. You know, it's almost like the boomers, you know, how like they stay in political office till they're like 90. We're getting that in college football now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, go to the UFL, dude. The UFL is now a thing. You can go make a lot of money.
You can still develop
UFL.
Yeah.
Right.
It is kind of tough because, like, quarterback is a weird position, weirder than most when it comes to development, you know? But, right, I think at a certain point, like, you got to draw the line. And I think the line, we've approached it with Diego Pavia. For his sake, I want him to retire on a high note this year, you know?
Right. And other news, we can kind of also talk about the coaching carousel has already started this early in the year. I'm surprised it's this early. So UCLA has fired Deshaun Foster after starting 0-3. And I think he lost by multiple touchdowns to, like,
embarrassing.
Was it New Mexico, regular New Mexico?
Just embarrassing.
A known hapless program that's just historically awful.
Yeah.
And Virginia Tech has fired Brent Pry. Seeing Virginia Tech in their recent state has made me kind of sad, because they've been a solid program for a while, but they've really missed badly on the two hires after Beamer retired. And it's just sad to see, because they have Enter Sandman, they have Tradition.
Yeah, storied program.
They're a storied program. To watch them struggle like this is just sad. And also, they need to be good for the sake of their conference.
Yeah.
I know that sounds weird to say.
No, I get it. Because it's one thing to lose games, but look, we got to bring this up. We were talking about this over the weekend, I remember. I messaged you at one point. I'm like, does it feel like Virginia Tech is losing to Old Dominion every single season? Like, what a strange circumstance. Like, I guess Old Dominion's a fellow Virginia school that must be nearby. Like, I hear you typing, Rand, frantically. Does anyone know? Do you ever think about Old Dominion? Does anybody think about Old Dominion ever?
No, and they're a recent addition to the FBS, but I have seen multiple games in the past of them losing to them, which is kind of funny.
Yeah. Anyways, regarding Virginia Tech's future, I wish the best for them. Like you said, I think it's a good program with a pretty big fan base that deserves a lot better than this. And for what it's worth, it can't be that hard to, you know, find someone better than what they previously had, surely. So I think there's some room for optimism with Virginia Tech. Can't say the same for UCLA, though. I think that program's it's not in a good state right now.
So let's move on to this was their Super Bowl award. I see you have something on the notes here. Go for it.
We need to discuss a Super Bowl champion this week. I believe they were in the running last week as well. Nebraska, folks. Nebraska defeated Houston Christian. Not Houston, but Houston Christian, which is an FCS school. The Houston Christian Huskies. Show of hands, who here has ever heard of the Houston Christian Huskies before this moment? Have you heard of this team?
Bailey Zappi played there for 4 years, I believe, really? Before transferring to Western Kentucky and going to the Patriots.
Fascinating. What's fun?
That's all I know about them.
This is a fun fact about Houston Christian, because I was kind of doing a little bit of research into this. If you go to ESPN.com and you look at the Houston Christian Huskies and you go to the schedule tab, okay, you can see their results year by year, like 2024, you can see their schedule, all their wins and losses. If you go to 2023, for the Houston Christian Huskies on ESPN.com, you will see something that I have never seen before on ESPN, which is on Saturday, November 4th, 2023, they played a team and technically got the result of a win, but a win with a forfeit. I've never seen this on any other game on ESPN.com. And you want to know who they played? He's looking it up. You want to know who they played on November 4th, 2023? Take a guess, Randy.
It was... I cannot even see. Who is this?
Northwestern State.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Northwestern State forfeited the game. That is how bad Northwestern State is. That is how embarrassing Minnesota's, you know, that win over Northwestern State is. They should be ashamed of themselves running on a fireworks. I just wanted to point it out. This is a fun piece of trivia, folks. I've never seen this in any other game in all these years. So, a little fun fact.
I'm trying to see if they actually played the game at all. Like, what happened? If they, like, quit halfway through?
I know, right?
I can't tell.
I can't tell either. So, it just, I don't know. Actually, if you look at Northwestern State in 2023, I'm realizing now they have 5 losses via forfeit that year. They went 0-12 that season. So I don't know what's going on, guys, with Northwestern State.
If anybody has information on this, I would love to know it, because it can't be like a COVID thing, right? Did they literally run out of players?
And it was 5 games in a year. Like, I don't, man.
That is odd. Okay.
I don't know what's going on. Anyways, that's my congrats to Nebraska on winning their Super Bowl against Houston Christian. They dominated the game, but if you've checked anywhere, and I unfortunately have, on Nebraska's fan base, the hype is out of this world. They've played no one this season. They've played no one. But they feel like they've already won the Super Bowl. And I hate to see them. And it grinds my gears.
Nebraska could be back. They could be back, man. They play Michigan this upcoming week. I'm going to give by. Yeah. I'm going to give by. This was their Super Bowl award to the Auburn Tigers, defeating South Alabama by 2 touchdowns.
Yeah.
They scored a grand total of 3 points in the second half, and they were playing real hard in the fourth quarter, really trying to earn that win.
Was it ever in doubt? Or now I'm looking here. I mean, they had a decent lead for most of the game, it looks like, but I don't know, man.
Some of the game, and it looked too much of a struggle than it should have.
That describes a lot of Auburn in my mind. They're kind of always sort of struggling. You know what I mean?
That is true. But then they'll randomly probably beat us.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
So, like, whatever. That's how it goes.
I wanted this handout on one final award before we head out to the preview of week 4's games. We're kind of making, I'm trying to make this a tradition, Randy, this the elephant in the room award. My elephant in the room this week is Ohio State. supposedly number one top-ranked defending national champion, Ohio State, who played Ohio this last weekend. It was like a shockingly close game for about three quarters of it. At one point in the third quarter, Ohio State was only up 13-9 against Ohio. Do you think this is room for concern, Randy, if you're an Ohio State fan?
Possibly, especially considering the week one Texas game and what we know about Arch Manning in Texas now. I try not to put too much stock into these G5 stinker games. It happens. And Ohio is one of the better group of five teams. If you remember, they did beat West Virginia. So just keep an eye out for Ohio State. And you also never know if it's going to be one of those situations where they know how to turn it on late.
Yeah, unfortunately. They have so much talent, I'm sure. But I don't know, man. I don't know. It was fun to see the score line in the third quarter there and think, what if Ohio pulls us off? They didn't, but it's fun to think.
My elephant in the room goes to Texas and Arch Manning. They beat UTEP 27-10. And I'm just going to read off Arch Manning's stat line for the game.
Yeah.
11 of 25, 114 yards, one touchdown, one interception. He has looked awful. And I don't know what it is. If you look at the film from last year, his two starts, he looked pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know why he's struggling this badly. It doesn't make any sense. Texas is going to, he's going to have to play better for Texas to have any shot down the stretch. And I mean, sure. You never know. He could maybe shake off the cobwebs a little bit, kind of shake it off, have a good bye week at a good time and see what he could do to kind of regroup. But yeah, that's very concerning.
Yeah, looking at his season stats right now, what's most alarming to me is his completion percentage. It's only 55%, 55.3, which is, I mean, that's not going to win you against most SEC opponents. So he needs to improve and improve quickly, because Texas, they've got a tough schedule coming up here in the next few weeks. And everyone wants to clown on Arch, and they will if he keeps playing like this.
So now I guess we can move on to next week.
Let's do it. We got some good games coming up here, Randy. And I marked down several. I try not to make the show too much about Wisconsin, but rather I'm going to make it about Maryland here. Shouts out to NSB. Maryland plays at Wisconsin, 11 a.m. Tomorrow. I wrote in the notes for this episode, Randy, and I've thought about it today, and I think this is true. This is probably the most important game of Luke Fickell's career. For one reason. It's expected for Wisconsin as a program to lose games like we lost last week against Alabama. It stinks. It's not fun. But it is what it is. We cannot lose to Maryland. We cannot lose to Maryland. I don't think we've ever lost to Maryland since they've joined the Big Ten. Let me look that up now here. But this is a game that, like, if we lose this dude, we're going 2-10. You know what I mean? Like, this is like our one chance to kind of kickstart this year. And I don't know, man. I've kind of got a bad feeling about this one. What do you think?
No, I agree with your assessment, because you have such a tough schedule again this year. I remember last year you played like three number one teams.
Yeah.
I mean, after this, you have to play Ohio State, Oregon, Illinois is now good. Indiana is now decent. Michigan still, they still have talent. It's just, it's not going to let up at all from here. This is going to be your easiest game left in the entire schedule.
We need
so
a layup.
You have to win it.
Yeah, we need a layup.
You need a layup.
Yeah, get some points on the board. I looked it up. Wisconsin's never lost to Maryland. That would be demoralizing. So yeah, we got to get it done. I'm sorry, NSB.
What do you think Wisconsin has to do this year for Fickell to keep his job?
I think make a bowl game. I think back-to-back seasons with a bowl game. I know our schedule's tough, but like, there's winnable games, man. Like, we should be able to beat a team like Maryland or Iowa or Washington or Minnesota. Like, we should be able to, right? And if we win those games, we'll make a bowl game. And I think if we go 6-6 and win a bowl game, that's enough forward momentum for me and the fan base, I think, to at least, like, be on board with them for another season. But if we end up losing all these games, dude, especially these layup games like this, it's year three, man. Like, there's no excuse at this point. You know what I mean? Like, it's time. It's time to start winning.
And you need to have some momentum going into the Ohio State game. The Ohio State game is going to be at Camp Randall.
Yeah.
That was one of my criticisms of Fickell, is that his teams never seem to get motivated for smaller games, quote unquote.
Yeah.
But of course, I mean, it's easy to motivate a program, a team, to play against the number one team, especially when they still believe they can win it.
Yeah.
They need to believe that they can beat Ohio State, and they need to look competitive, tough, strong, physical, mm-hmm. all those, you know, kind of keywords there. And they're just not going to, if they lose to a team like Maryland, they're not going to believe they can beat Ohio State.
Sure.
They're not going to believe they have any shot against Oregon.
I agree. Gotta play well, man.
Play good. He's going to lose the locker room at that point. Yeah. If you lose the locker room, you lose your job.
Exactly. Next game that's on my radar, same time, 11 o'clock. Number 17 Texas Tech at number 16 Utah. I've been saying for the last couple of weeks, I think that Texas Tech is very quietly one of the best teams in the Big 12 this year. Look them up, dude. They've been annihilating every opponent they've faced this season. And for as much as I disrespect the Big 12, I kind of actually respect Texas Tech and fully expect them to win this game.
Actually, my lock of the week is Texas Tech over Utah.
Boom.
Even though it's at Utah at 11 o'clock, it's not that far of a travel for them. But Texas Tech has quietly been probably the best Big 12 team this year.
Yeah.
They've been spending a lot of money on NIL and recruiting. They've been investing their oil money. It's what they need to do to be competitive. And I kind of respect, like, I don't like college football becoming a who has the most money game, like right. teams like Oregon. But I'm okay with it in certain aspects if it's a team like Texas Tech who can finally have a chance to really pull something together that isn't known for just bullying other teams with their money.
Right. I think that fan base deserves some happiness every once in a while, you know?
And I like that they can kind of keep other Texas programs in check.
Yeah, for sure.
And they can, and they like can, they can elevate the Big 12 almost single-handedly by just elevating the competition level. Everybody's going to have to play up to the best team in the conference. And without an elite team like now, I mean, there's just no, it's like how NFL divisions work, those 14 divisions. As a Packers fan, I'm sure you're aware. Whenever there's a top team in a division, it makes everybody else in the division better because they have to specifically respond and try to beat that team. They have to build their team around beating that team, and it improves everybody. When you don't have like a marker to kind of set yourself against, it's kind of hard to know exactly what you need to do.
I totally agree. And one thing I, you know, this is kind of related to what we were talking about before with Diego Pavia and players staying at a school for a long time. I've been like really soured on Utah ever since the Cam Rising stuff happened. Do you feel the same way? He was there for like 8 years, like something obscene. And like, in a way, they kind of started this fiasco that we now find ourselves in. I blame Utah.
Fair, he did have multiple redshirts, but some of them were medical. He had a transfer, freshman redshirt, medical redshirt.
COVID year
didn't count. Technically, I think he would have had another year of eligibility. He could have.
Yeah, the amount of talk and hype he got for literally not even playing, I think, last season is just, I don't get it, man. I don't get it.
He had two decent seasons in 2021, 2022, but after having sitting out a whole year and then still being hurt 2024, he was just done.
It's over. Let's talk about your favorite team. Number 22, Auburn, goes on the road to number 11, Oklahoma, at 2:30. It feels like someone will be exposed in this game. I feel like both these teams are just like ticking time bombs for being exposed, and we'll see one of them blow up this weekend.
Don't necessarily agree. I think it's going to be a tough, hard-fought game, but I don't think exposed is the right word. I think Oklahoma's going to win.
Yeah.
But I think they're better than what you're giving them credit for. I mean, obviously Michigan isn't that great this year.
No.
That is what it is. But they controlled the game. They won by multiple scores, and it was not nearly as close to the score indicated, 24-13 when they beat Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe in John Mateer. He's been doing great. And fun fact, Auburn has Jackson Arnold, whom Oklahoma had last year.
You see a lot
so that'll
of
be interesting for him to go back to Norman.
Yeah. I mean, it's like how Billy.
So Williams, it's going to be one of those tough prove it. Both teams have a lot they want to prove.
Right. I think Oklahoma comes in on top, though, as well. I'm not like quite sold on Oklahoma this year. I don't know. Like, I think back to last season and a lot of the struggles they had, especially down the stretch once they got into their SEC schedule. I think we're going to see a bit more of that this season once they start playing some tougher, more physical teams.
They can keep up. They seem to have the opposite problem that they had under Lincoln Riley, where now they actually have decent defenses.
Yeah.
So it's shown that they can have it. They just have to have both the offense and the defense at the same time.
Sure.
So we'll see if they can do it with John Mateer. It's going to come down to quarterback play.
A game that, in my mind, is almost parallel to this in the Big Ten, at the same time as well, 2:30 p.m., Number 21, Michigan goes to Nebraska. Both of these teams feel so fraudulent to me. And on one hand, I'm glad that a team will lose this and be a little bit exposed. But on the other hand, I'm sad that, like, there's a world where Nebraska could win this game and be ranked. And that it just feels wrong, man. It just feels wrong.
This total coin flip. I mean, if they win, they probably deserve a ranking at least in the 20s.
I get it. I just, dude, Nebraska fans are so insufferable. You don't even know. You really don't.
I don't have to interact with them, so I don't know anything
about
them.
It's weird. Dude. Like, I'll be on Facebook, right? And my algorithm serves me up a post of, like, Luke Fickell's post-game press conference, right? And you open up the comments section. There are more Nebraska fans commenting on Wisconsin than Wisconsin fans. And they're just so eager to tell you, shouldn't have fired Paul Christ. You know who that reminds me of? That reminds me a lot of when we got rid of our guy. It's just like, just shut up. Just stop.
They want you to suffer in their misery too. Misery loves company, right?
I get it.
Dylan Raiola has quietly had a good season. He's got eight touchdowns.
I would say not quietly, Randy. That's the thing. This whole Mahomie thing. Like, how is the Mahomie thing still happening? When the Chiefs are having a 0-2 season, you know what I mean? Like, it's this weird parallel. Like, I don't know why Nebraska's winning when the Chiefs are losing. What's going on? They had a guy propose.
Who knows?
And try to, like, do the whole Travis Kelce thing of proposing to his, you know, girlfriend. It's just, oh my God. Oh, this.
That is the death knell of the Chiefs.
This team is
right
so,
there.
Dude, it's just so many bad vibes around Nebraska this year. It's not even real.
I'm going to look forward on their schedule a little bit, too. They really have a pretty easy schedule.
Yeah, so
like
jealous,
they play Michigan State, Maryland, Minnesota, Northwestern,
their only good team
UCLA.
That plays is at Penn State, and, like, Penn State's whatever. Like, Penn State will win that game, but, like, Nebraska, it's terrifying. Like, if they win this game, dude, they're probably going 11-1 and making the playoffs. And they shouldn't be. Like, they shouldn't be in the playoffs, but, like, they're going to be. You know what I mean? It's tough, man. Ugh.
Yeah, that conference scheduling is pretty embarrassing. The best team they scheduled was Cincinnati, which I guess is a P4, but, like,
they avoid so many good Big Ten. Ohio State, they're not playing Oregon. You could argue Illinois could expose them, right? They're not getting any of that. Oh,
all right. Here's glad we played Florida State and Wisconsin in our out of conference, because, like, yeah, if we played somebody other than Florida State and only had one P4 OSU like we normally did, we'd be undefeated right now and we'd be receiving all this hype. But we would have learned so much less about our team in the process.
Right.
It's good to face these challenges early and kind of know what you need to do. Nebraska doesn't really – they're not really getting tested. They're not going to improve from that.
Till the very, very end of the year at Penn State. And then what? So who cares? Like, they'll have one loss. Like, they're still going to – oh, man. Man.
It's kind of a strategy. You see teams that haven't succeeded a lot scheduling as easy as they can out of conference to try to sneak into the playoffs. But – I mean, I guess you kind of do have to do that to have a chance to build some momentum as a program. But it's Nebraska. Don't they have a massive fan base and a lot of money and all this other stuff?
I think they want. But, like, try to think of it, dude. When was the last time Nebraska played, like, a big out-of-conference game? You know? They never do. They never do. They're just – they're.
I was going to say, I have no idea.
I'm looking. They played Colorado last year. Remember that? Who can forget? They've had a home and home with Colorado. I guess they played Oklahoma a few years ago. That was sort of legit. I'm looking back now. Colorado in 2019. Like, why do they keep playing Colorado? Like, that's just – it's playing scared, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyways.
I can sense the disgust when you talk about Nebraska.
It really is. It's a specific kind of disgust. And really directed towards their fan base, mostly. They're really bad people. Let's switch it up here. Florida at number 4, Miami. This is a night game, 6:30. Florida is 1-2. But it feels like foregone that they will win this game. Do you feel the same way, Randy?
I have a weird feeling about it. Their schedule, they have the toughest schedule in the country.
Yeah.
But they're one of those teams. They are insanely talented. Hey, man, if you can throw 5 picks and only lose by 10, that's kind of impressive in a weird way. They have a solid defense.
Yeah.
They have a lot of talent. If they can put it together for a couple of games, especially these games where they're going to really know their opponent, like an in-state rivalry type of thing, you never know. It's, again, I hate to draw NFL comparisons, but it's like playing a divisional team in the NFL, like we saw with the Dolphins and the Bills last night.
Yeah.
No matter what disparity there is in some of these, like, very close regional games, it can be close, and you never know what's going to happen.
I agree. Should be fun, for sure. especially being a night game at Miami. Those are always fun to watch.
Another thing is, I don't think Florida has given up season.
No, especially because like they're only a point loss in conference. Like there's still plenty of room for improvement.
I mean, they have to take it one game at a time. They know how tough every game is, and they probably have some pride to play for.
Yeah.
Even if you know you're not going to win all these games, just being able to say, hey, we beat such and such, even if we lost four games.
It's an opportunity. Right? Like, they have so many opportunities to have these huge, you know, big, almost, I hate to say program-defining win, because Florida is a well-defined program. Like, they don't need, like, you know. But like, it's the kind of win, if they can take down Texas, or Miami, or Georgia, or even Florida State, like, that's a huge morale boost. That's a huge way of being like, hey, recruits, check this out. Come play here. We take down big teams like this. Come here to play for this opportunity, you know. And I think
you can be who gets us over the get us over the hump.
Exactly. So I think Florida has, like you said, plenty of room to make statements here, and I think they'll make one against Miami. The final game I had that I want to talk about is number 9 Illinois at number 19 Indiana. Again, same time as Florida Miami. I get a hunch that both of these teams, Illinois and Indiana, are fool's gold. Do you feel the same?
Fool's gold is the right word, because I feel like fool's gold implies that people are really high on them more than in respect of what their programs usually are.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I think people kind of understand that they're probably around 15, top 15, top 20 power rated team. But ultimately, one of them has to lose this game. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we're going to see, like, we're not going to see great theatric football in this game, but somebody's going to win in the trenches, this and that. And it's going to look like a lesser version of maybe like Georgia winning a game. Does that make sense?
It does. I look at both of these teams. You know, we're talking about Big Ten schedules. I feel like there's a tremendous amount of variance between some teams in the Big Ten versus others. And you look at a school like Illinois, right? It's true they play number 1 Ohio State later on in the season, but beyond that, Washington, Rutgers, Northwestern, Maryland. They play Duke out of conference. It's just like, what are we doing, man? Like, what are we doing? You know what I mean? Like, would they play Purdue? Like these are like they somehow managed to schedule all the bad Big Ten schools, including us. They play at Wisconsin. Like, it's just not fair, dude. Like, how? We need some.
It's
kind
the
of,
luck
like,
of the draw with the schedule sometimes.
See what?
It's the luck of the draw of the schedule sometimes. I just wonder how this is going to play out when it comes to actually selecting playoff teams. Because I feel like we've never had this much variance in strength of schedule ever in the playoff era.
You know, you have the kind of like a bigger chance of having insane schedules and also layup schedules along the way. And it's just kind of luck of the draw.
Because, like, think about it. What if you have, like, 2-loss Illinois being compared to 3-loss Alabama? Like, let's be honest. Who are you going to pick?
Oh, Alabama, of course. No doubt in my mind.
And when people are saying that, you know it's legit, because you know how people feel about us. People don't want to see us in the playoffs. I get it. There's a little bit of fatigue, and I get it.
I was thinking about this, and if you'll humor me for a second here, okay? I think the difference, what's making things interesting right now, is the Big Ten in particular. In the Big Ten this year, there are like maybe 4 or 5 like very legitimate teams that could be playoff contenders. And then there's a lot of other teams, and some of them might be good. Like, I think USC, for example, could be fairly legit. I think even Indiana might be kind of the real deal. Maybe not a playoff team, but like a top 25 team, right? But then there's just this is like a void. Like, we have like Rutgers and Northwestern, and we've got like Wisconsin this year, right? And Maryland and Purdue. And I feel like the difference between like the very top, say, third of the conference and the bottom third of the conference is like so big that it's like, I feel like there needs to be intervention at a certain point in the scheduling. Like, it can't just be random. I'm guessing this was random. Like, the Big Ten randomly said, oh, this team will play this team. We can't have, we need like divisions again or something, man. Like, this isn't sustainable long term.
And you're going to have situations where you have, because there's such little head-to-head comparisons, you're going to have probably like, what, maybe 6 teams vying for that third or fourth spot, Big Ten playoff spot, right?
Yeah.
And it's just going to be impossible to compare them other than an eye test.
Yeah. And I don't know, man. I realize I'm saying this from a very like salty position, being, you know, someone who kind of really got screwed over this year by the scheduling, but I miss the Big Ten West. I really do.
I get it. One game I did want to talk about was South Carolina playing at Missouri. Ooh. And that's just because I'm impressed with little old Missouri this year and their quarterback, Bo Pribula, who is a Penn State transfer. If you remember last year, he had a transfer before the playoffs began because of the transfer portal window. And James Franklin, you know, he was not happy about it. He was fine with Bo Pribula doing it. He was mad that Bo Pribula was put in the position that that's what he had to do.
Yeah, it's understandable.
It kind of is what it is, but I'm just glad for him that he's been able to perform so well. He's thrown for 800 yards in the year, 7 touchdowns, 1 interception. He's quietly been really, really, really good.
Yeah.
I think he had to come in during the Wisconsin game, didn't he?
Did he? Hold on.
I think I remember that.
Oh my God. I'm getting like PTSD, dude. I'm looking him up now on his stats. Let's
check out his remember stats. He played decent. He made some great throws during that game to allow them to win the game. So it's not surprising that he's done this well.
You're opening up a wound.
But Missouri's kind of my sleeper team for the year. Granted, they have to play Alabama. They have to play Texas A&M. They have to play Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Weird to say they have to play Vanderbilt.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, Auburn, that's not going to be an easy game. It's a very tough schedule.
I looked it up. This is the game that Wisconsin was only trailing by one in the fourth quarter. Bo Pribula did come in. He went 11 for 13, 98 yards, 1 touchdown, 0 picks. He's the real deal. I remember now. He was actually like, okay, here's the thing, dude. You're in a close game against the third best team in the country at the time. Their star quarterback goes down. It's the fourth quarter. Let's just say it out loud. You're feeling pretty good, right? Not that we ever encourage injuries. Never, right? We would never do the Jim Bobcast, but I think we need to be honest, emotionally honest here. When I say everyone kind of hopes that happens.
And no, I agree with you.
It still wasn't enough.
I mean, I don't know what else. You could not expect any more from a backup quarterback than what he did. Just come in and basically light it up, make all the right plays, not make any mistakes, and even throw a touchdown to save the game.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you want from a backup. And he's gone on to prove that he is the real deal at Missouri thus far. But it definitely sucks to be in a position where you're playing the number three team. You feel like this is your chance.
Yep.
This is your chance, and it just doesn't happen because of that.
Yep. So
it feels like plot armor against you.
The plot armor. We'll see if Missouri has plot armor. I think they'll beat South Carolina. No offense, Hash Brown. But yeah, Missouri, they'll be a team to keep my eye on, I guess, this year. You brought up a good point. Like, they are letting teams up so far early in the season. So we'll see if they can keep that up when they head into the SEC.
Another thing is, it seems like this year it's hard even. I mean, we're 3-4 games into the season, and it's still hard to really peg some teams how good or not good or how fraudulent they are.
Yeah.
I feel like most years by this point, we have a better idea of who's actually legit and who isn't and how the season more realistically will play out. But we just don't have that this year. So it's going to be interesting to see more and more data kind of come through.
Yeah, there isn't like a single front runner. You know what I mean? Like, there isn't a single team you can like point to right now and say, yep, that's the team that's going to get down. Because it feels like every single team has at least some glaring flaws at this point that need to be cleaned up. I'm sure in the coming months, we'll see those cleaned up and we'll see these front runners merge. But right now, it is a really fun and like exciting time to watch.
Part of it also is, I mean, at least from the SEC's perspective, is we're starting to schedule more out-of-conference games. And we're going to 9 games, by the way.
Yep.
9 conference games. But we're playing more than just us are playing these marquee early games. Because think about it. If we played somebody other than Florida State, would you not be saying at this point, Alabama's the front runner?
No, right? I get it. I completely understand.
So there's more attrition early in the season. There's more losses. Think of Texas played anybody other than Ohio State, or Ohio State played anybody other than Texas and didn't almost lose that game.
Right. No, I totally agree. I think it's been fun for the sport too, right? To see all these big out of conference matchups week after week. And we're going to get a few more this week. Again, Miami, Florida. That should be a fun one. But, you know, I think what we're really going to know who's the best front runner is like when we start entering like deeper into conference play. Like we keep talking about these SEC teams, dude. And like every SEC team we bring up, it's like, yeah, they've had a pretty easy schedule so far, but like next month they're playing back-to-back-to-back-to-back ranked games, you know? Like eventually like it's going to be separated who's legit and who's not because of that.
It's interesting to see how many SEC teams are fighting for those 3, maybe 4 playoff spots.
I'm guessing 4.
And see who realistically has a shot. Guessing 4. And see what the criteria they're going to use is. If they're going to compare them to maybe number 2 in the Big 12, number 2 or 3 in the ACC. see how that stacks up versus number four, number five in the SEC Big Ten.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just so curious as to what criteria is going to be used, if they're just basically going to have to go off quote-unquote eye test, mm-hmm. which I don't necessarily like, but sometimes when you have this many teams in the FBS, you kind of have to.
Well, I think things will clear up as we, you know, enter on here. Like, not all these teams are going to finish ranked, obviously. But I don't, I hate to say it as like the biggest SEC hater. Like, you know this, Randy. You know my thoughts.
I do.
I think we're like, where we're kind of at right now with the SEC is like, they're sort of middle of the road teams, I guess you could say. There's just so much talent there that there's the potential that they could do extremely well. Like, a team like Florida, of course, could, you know, just like shock everyone and beat basically anyone on their schedule this year. Where I think things tend to fall apart in the SEC, and I think you'll probably agree with this, Randy, is because this is a zero-sum game, teams will lose. And you eventually, we talked about this earlier, you eventually do kind of lose the locker room, you know? And you run to a point where like a team like Auburn, that maybe on paper could be just about anybody if they're lucky enough, you know, at some point they're going to be, you know, 5-5. And just like the juice will be gone at that point. You know what I mean? Do you think this is a fair assessment of what oftentimes happens to the middle of the road teams in the SEC by the end of the season?
I definitely think it's true. However, some of them have a tendency to really want to play that rivalry game really tough at the end of the year. Auburn is notorious for that, for having the wheels fall off in the middle of the season and then bringing it all together to play Alabama. I think that's really most of it. But I definitely get what you're saying. By midway through the season, if they've dropped three games, there's just... It's what tough. Do you have to play for at that point?
It's tough for any kid. It's tough. That's why I like, keep saying Wisconsin. Like, we need to win. It's, you know, you need to bounce back immediately. Like, that's what good teams do, you know. So, should be fun to watch. Any other games?
Undefeated in conference play so far.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. Any other games?
That's all the games. Okay. That's all the games I have. I'm just excited to see the season play out and see how things stack up. It's going to be very interesting down the stretch.
Again, it's a lot of unknowns at this point, and I think we'll have a few answers to those unknowns in the coming weeks. Until then, folks.
Oh, I did actually. I had one more. Wait. I did have one more. I have one more.
Please.
Ole Miss plays Tulane. Ole Miss has had two narrow victories against Kentucky and Arkansas, who are kind of, I don't want to say the bottom feeders of the SEC, but they are probably two of the, they kind of are. And they've had two very close games. They played Tulane. Tulane could legitimately beat them.
I don't see it happening, but I could see Ole Miss kind of continuing to struggle a little bit. This is going to sound...
But here's the thing. Yeah. Here's the thing. Ole Miss's quarterback is likely out for the game.
Okay, that changes some things, especially knowing how Lane Kiffin likes to run an offense. What's wrong with your quarterback?
Granted, it's Lane Kiffin. I have no idea. I just know he's unlikely to play. He's been injured. Yeah.
If I had to be like conspiratorial for a second, part of me wonders if Lane Kiffin is sort of phoning it in because 2 weeks ago he thought he'd be getting a call from Alabama asking if he could be their next head coach.
No, I don't think he thought that.
Okay. I'm just saying, it's, you know, weird things.
The media likes to overreact to these things, but you got to let the season play out.
Oh, I agree. I agree. I could see Lane being a bit, you know, he's not the most emotionally stable guy.
I think he likes it at Ole Miss because he can have a fun offense, he can run, he has more control of the program, lower pressure.
Yeah.
It's more fun when you're playing with house money to a degree.
Exactly.
But it's just going to be hard to get over that hump. I just wonder if eventually he's going to get tired of not having what it takes as far as resources go to get over the hump and move somewhere else when he sees the opportunity. You know, we'll see how that plays out. But I think he's having fun.
I think so too. You know who else is having fun, Randy? Me, this episode. Thank you for recording. It's been fun, folks. Thank you all for listening, of course. Sorry for the delay on this one. I'm just glad to get it out just in time for this week. Should be a fun time, folks, this weekend. Hope you all enjoy the games. And until next time, as always, high tide.